Welcome to Torah Mecha Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Vesser, and today we'll be studying Malachim Aleph, Perek Dalet, first book of Malachim, chapter 4. Chapter 4 is a list, and the tendency when we see a list in Tanakh is to kind of gloss over it. Okay, you know, we see that there's a list, but actually lists in Tanakh are very important, and from these lists you can glean very often crucial information to understanding the characters and understanding the story. The list here is of Shlomo's administration. And when a person campaigns for any type of office or even to take over a company, the rhetoric is often about big ideas, values, ideals. And when that person actually wins or takes over and begins to govern or run something, the person realizes that there's actually a lot of bureaucracy to deal with, and nothing at all is going to get done without a system. Perek Gimel, last perek, ended with the pasuk Vayishma'u kol Yisrael to mishpat asher shafat hamelech. Bnei Yisrael heard the judgment that Shlomo judged. Vayir'u mipnei hamelech. They were scared of him. Ki ra'u ki chachmat elokim bekirbo lasot mishpat. They saw there was this godly wisdom in Shlomo that he can actually do justice. In perek 4, Shlomo needs to actually put those ideals of his administration into practice. Shlomo wanted to do good to his people. He wanted to be a fair judge and follow his mitzvot. But how does that get done? By studying Shlomo's system, we can glean how he attempted to actualize his priorities. The parak begins with the pasuk, Vahi ha-melech Shlomo, melech al kol Yisrael. King Shlomo was king over all of Yisrael. This simple statement is actually a big deal. David began his reign only over Shevet Yehuda. It took him 7 years and many hardships and struggles to reach this type of statement, which he actually does in Shmuel Bet, Parchet, chapter 8, verse 15, where it says, Vayimloch David al kol Yisrael. David ruled over all of Israel. For David, this was the culmination of a journey. For Shlomo, it is his inheritance. He has been given the gift of shalom, of peace, just like his name. In Parak 8 of Shmuel Bet, David has a very short administrative list. It begins with Yoav, his famed general of the army, and then goes to his mazkir, which the Mahari Kara interprets as the one in charge of the army draft. And then he lists David's main kohanim, his religious figures, Tzadok and Achimelech, and then Sariah, David's scribe, which the Mahari Kara explains as the person who publishes the army draft. Clear from reading David's list what his priorities are. He is engaged in war his entire life, but because of this war, that's why he is able to give his son Shlomo the gift of peace. And therefore, Shlomo's first administrator, in contrast to his father David in Pasuk Bet, is Azariah ben Sadok HaKohen. The Kohen, the religious leader, comes first in the list of Shlomo's administrators, which showcases Shlomo's intentions to build the Beit HaMikdash. Shlomo also has a mazkir and a sofer, this writer and a scribe, but since they are listed before the chief of his army, the Mefarshim agree that they're not related to the army, but rather they're related to the workings of the courts and the recording of the taxes. The Sar Tzava, the parallel to Yoav, the chief of the army, Benayahu ben Yehoyadza, is listed fourth. He's the one, if you remember, who killed the people that Shlomo needed to kill back in chapter 2. Shlomo did have to navigate tricky political situations. It wasn't all so easy for him, but he doesn't have to fight major battles in order to be accepted as king. He's able to benefit from David's wars, both internal with Shaul and external with the Plishtim and other surrounding nations. But what does it look like to be a king of peace? We've actually never had this before in Jewish history. Not in the time of Yoshua, not in the time of the Shoftim, not during the time of Shaul, and certainly not during the reign of David. So the rest of the Barak tells us. And the answer, interestingly, is both very lofty and very bland. It looks like taxes. Because when you have peace, suddenly you have prosperity, and suddenly you can focus on other things besides the war. And that's what Shlomo does. He sets out a system where people are able to support other initiatives besides for winning battles. And therefore, there's another position that appears on Shlomo's list that doesn't appear on David's list at all. And that is Adoniram ben Avda al-Hamas, the chief tax collector. This position is extremely important, as the rest of the perek is going to set out what was Shlomo's tax system that he put on the country as is needed to support his government. And what Shlomo does in order to collect enough taxes is he splits the land into 12 provinces, each of them run by an administrator, and each province and administrator is named in this perek. When we hear the number 12, our minds immediately go to the 12 tribes, and we would imagine that Shlomo separated his 12 tribes according to the tribal divisions. But actually, the number 12 represents the 12 months and not the 12 tribes. Each province was responsible for contributing enough money to support the king's household and army for 1 month of the year. And the Radak points out that the reason why the provinces were not divided by tribe, and rather by area and economic ability, they were divided by area and economic ability, because the tribes brought in different amounts of money. They had different types of land, and therefore they had different economic power. And by dividing the provinces not according to tribe, it ensured that everyone paid equal taxes and that the tax burden didn't fall disproportionately on a wealthier tribe. Or, meaning if they had equal amounts that they had to pay, it wouldn't be fair to the tribes that brought in less money. And therefore, the provinces are really different sizes. They're based on economic ability. So one of the provinces, which is listed in Pasuk 11, is the Doar region. And it says, Ben Aminadav, that's the name of the administrator, the son of Aminadav, Kol Nefat Doar, he had all the region of Doar, Tafat Bat Shlomo Haita Lo Lisha, and this person was married to Shlomo's daughter, whose name was Tafat. Now, this province is a tiny province. Professor Yehuda Kiel in the Dot Mikra explains that Doar was actually a very famous port city, perhaps the most famous at the time. It's near a modern-day Zichron Yaakov, a little north of Caesarea. While small, this province was very lucrative and was equal in economic power to much larger provinces. And we also notice that the administrator is Shlomo's son-in-law. We see the importance of this province as Shlomo is using a trusted family member to oversee it. The Dot Mikra goes on and lists all the other provinces as well and tries to connect the administrator of the province to people that we've learned about before in either David's story or Shlomo's story, and to show that these are people that Shlomo really trusted because they were in charge of his tax revenue. And we see something very interesting from Shlomo's list, and it really does express a certain ideal that goes beyond taxes. And that is that Shlomo wanted to accomplish a real unification of Bnei Israel. And by dividing the tax provinces up the way he does, Shlomo is making a statement. And that statement is that he is breaking up the tribal system in favor of a unified central government. The lot of the people who have to raise a certain amount of money together and who live near each other is therefore thrown in together. Together, they must put together the tax amount that's demanded of them. And through this, Shlomo is moving away from the ancient system of tribes and family and putting in its place an economic system that people need to work together, not because of common ancestry, but because of common gain. And anyone who, if you think about the American history, the history of America, there is a tension between this federal government, on the one hand, this common system, and states' rights. Do the states actually have their own independent government in the founding of the country? There's a lot of tension between these two. And we see that there's almost a tension here as well. Shlomo is specifically trying to break up the tribe system. And not to say that none of the provinces followed the tribes, but most of them didn't. And the tribal system was actually one of the great strengths of Bnei Israel, but it also in the past had caused a lot of friction, especially in the era of the Shoftim, where certain Shoftim couldn't get certain tribes to join in battle because that Shevet was not being directly attacked. Devorah, for example, in her song calls out various tribes for not helping her in her battle against Sisra, that there was what was happening, at least in the time of the Shoftim, is that the tribes were not thinking of themselves as a larger country. And Shlomo, in order to be Melech al Kol Yisrael, needed to break that to a certain extent. And he needed to feel that we are unified as one country. And he wants to create a world where everyone is dedicated to the country first and to the tribe second. Now, this does seem like a wonderful goal, but there's a problem here. And that is when you finish reading the list of administrators and provinces, we realize that there's no administrator listed and no land listed for the land of Shevet Yehuda. in the South. Now, there is one at the end of the list. There's one enigmatic phrase, which is Unetziv Echad Asher Ba'aretz. There was one administrator in the land. And to explain this phrase, it's not clear exactly what that means. So Rashi quotes the Gemara Sanhedrin, where Rav and Shmuel disagree. And one says that this extra officer was just an overseer over all the other officers. And the other one says that this extra administrator was actually in charge of leap years, because again, each province was in charge of a month. So what happens when there's a 13th month? So this administrator was in charge of the 13th month. What's interesting is that neither opinion says that this administrator was over the land of Yehuda. And the Mefarshim really do follow this, that it seems to be that Shevet Yehuda did not have an administrator and therefore perhaps did not pay taxes. Now, it could be that Shevet Yehuda contributed in other ways. The palace was in their Shevet. Everyone was coming on Aliyah L'Regel to the Beit HaMikdash. Perhaps, you know, one day they would come to the Beit HaMikdash during the three holidays, and perhaps Shevet Yehuda had to contribute in a different way. But Yehuda Kiel in Dat Mikra is so uncomfortable with this explanation that Shevet Yehuda didn't actually pay taxes, that he explains that the word Ba'aretz means that land, and therefore it must be referring to the land of Shevet Yehuda. And perhaps that phrase does mean that the land of Yehuda had their own administrator, but no other Mefarish really follows this path. So why, if Shlomo wanted to unify the country, would he leave out his own Shevet? It smacks of nepotism and could really cause resentment in terms of the tax burden. Many of the other Shvatim were divided up in terms of their tribal lands, and Shevet Yehuda actually was not, therefore, divided up and didn't pay taxes. This is a very difficult question that isn't resolved in the Perek, but from later on in the story, we do know that there was resentment between all the other tribes as a whole and Shevet Yehuda. Perhaps all the other tribes kind of came together and did somewhat lose their tribal identity, but they knew that they had a problem with Shevet Yehuda, and this is going to boil into the conflict that happens in the time of Shlomo's son. And perhaps the seeds of that conflict, of the breaking up of the Shvatim, were set into place here with the tax code, perhaps. The last pasuk acts as a bookend with the first perek. It echoes the first pasuk and sums up the glory and idealism of Shlomo's time. Pasuk Kaf reads, Yehuda v'Yisrael rabim kohol al haram larov. Yehuda and Yisrael were many like the sand on the sea. They were multitudes and multitudes. Ochlim v'shotim usmechim. They would eat and drink and they were happy. Such a wonderful pasuk of peace and prosperity in Eretz Yisrael. The people do not have to constantly engage in warfare and protect their borders. Even the phrase kahol al hayam, the like the sands at the sea, reminds us of Hashem's promise to Abraham that his children will multiply and settle in their land. And this is the first time since the time of Abraham that this phrase is used to apply to the Israelites instead of the armies of their enemies. We see here they are fulfilling their mandate. They have arrived. Such a simple statement. They're eating, they're drinking, and they are happy. Of course, we can't help but see the slight contrast between the two psukim, the first and the last. The parak opened by saying Shlomo was melech al kol Yisrael. He was king over all of Israel. And it closes by, instead of calling them kol Yisrael, calling them Yehuda and Yisrael. And we note the division even in their prosperity. And we'll have to see how that ends up coming to fruition. Thank you for signing together, Le'iloi Nishmat, Frida Bat Moshe Eliyahu.